today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Recently, Ron Bumblefoot Thal did some shows with Megadeth bassist David Ellefson on his Bass Story tour. I thought this was the perfect time to take the trek out to Niagara Falls, USA, and get him on the Talkin' Rock podcast. He gives me the rundown after his solid year with his bandmates and Sons of Apollo.
It was a great run. I think we did a total of 83 shows this year we did.
If you know anything about Bumblefoot, you know that this guy takes guitar playing to a whole new scientific level. But there's some guitar parts he hasn't been able to figure out. He also tells me about guitarists he looks up to.
Joel Hoekstra, incredible. Doug Rappaport, incredible. And of course, the well-known cast of characters like Steve Vai, Steve Morse, Steve Lukather.
We talk about different projects he's been in, even what kind of kid he was. Oh, and there's a message for the GNR fans at the end on the 10th year anniversary of Chinese Democracy. Ron Bumblefoot Thal is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Ah, yes, a big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock podcast. I do appreciate it. I'd also appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star rating, write a review on this podcast. Those kind of things really go a long way, and we're kind of starting all over from scratch. And so, man, it would be super helpful if you could do that. I did this podcast for a few years called Radio Chatter. We kind of blew that up a couple months ago, and we're starting all over from scratch. So it's like a new day here on the Talkin' Rock podcast. And if you can give it a 5-star rating, write a review, share with your friends, I would definitely appreciate that. Anyways, on to Bumblefoot. And like I said, man, I'll tell you what, I took the trek out to Niagara Falls to see him on my day off. It was the day after Thanksgiving, November 23rd, which also happens to be the 10-year anniversary of the Chinese Democracy album. We do talk a little bit about that at the very end. But I took the trek out to Niagara Falls, hooked up with Bumblefoot. David Ellefson as well kind of drove them around Niagara Falls that day. Actually, it was really cool. Earlier in the day, we stopped at Johnny Chow from Stone Sour. He's got this killer restaurant in downtown Buffalo called Masuda Chow's. And so we ate lunch there and then went to Niagara Falls. They did sound check and whatnot. And I had a chance to drive them over to this VIP meet and greet at the Hard Rock Cafe in Niagara Falls with some listeners and whatnot. It was a really cool dinner event for a couple hours. Then, of course, the show that night. But before the show, I got back to the venue. And I sat in my car with Bumblefoot and recorded this interview in Niagara Falls, USA. Hope you guys dig this. It's Bumblefoot today on Talkin' Rock.
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to see you.
Yeah, you're out here on this David Ellefson thing, the Bass Story. So tell me how that got started.
Ah, well, it's something that David has been doing for a while now, and it's not quite a clinic. It's a one-man show where he tells stories about his experiences relating to his bass, and he plays songs and breaks them down, and then at the end we jam. So for this tour, we've been doing a quick little East Coast run, Northeast, and just been having a blast. I do a set. Well, there's an opening band, Dead by Wednesday, a fantastic band that's on David's label, EMP Records, and they open the show, kick everybody's butt, and then I come on and cool them down. and I do, yeah, like, my own little one-man storyteller show, though not much storytelling. It's more music, and maybe I'll get into a little bit of the science about one of the weird songs and some of the things that I do guitar-wise that might be of interest to people in the audience, and I'll throw out a cover or two and do stuff to backing tracks or do stuff just myself with a looper, and I finish up. David comes on. He does same kind of thing, and then at the end, we jam. We jam to some Megadeth or some of our favorite covers from Judas Priest or Kiss or Sabbath, anything. Yeah.
Now, so, yeah, by the way, speaking of the looper thing, I saw you do that before, and that's so awesome. That's kind of like where you build a song.
Yeah, start off with one part, and as it loops around, you can overdub another part onto it and play along with it and do anything, and you can build it up a whole lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you get hooked up with this tour? Like, have you known David Ellefson for a long time?
Yeah, I've known him, and I know the guy that runs his label, and I've actually licensed my last record, Little Brother Is Watching, onto David's label. So Yeah, we're all connected in that way. And yeah, that's it. They're just, it's very, everything is pretty casual just in life at this point. Anyone that does anything, it's just a quick email. Hey, I'm doing this thing. You want to join? Sure. Yeah.
So is that how Sons of Apollo works?
Same way. It was the same thing. Mike hit me up. He sent me an email, said, hey, you know how we've always been talking about putting a band together? Well, I got this thing that me and Derek are talking about doing. And I had jammed with Billy and Derek and Mike on Prognation at Sea Cruise a few years before. And I did Metal Allegiance with Mike and recorded on the album with Mike and David on the first album. And David was a guest on one of my songs I did with this amazing, talented guy, Milan Polak, that we did a song together. And yeah, everybody is interwoven. So yeah, it was a piece of cake. Just you call each other up. Hey, you want to do this thing? Yeah, sure, let's do it. Just like that.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the whole Sons of Apollo experience. So, I mean, talk to me about, like, putting the record together and then, I mean, going out and touring. You guys really toured, man. You guys were road dogs out there.
Yeah, we hit it all. We hit everywhere. All over the U.S., did some Canada, all over Europe, did Japan. Yeah, a lot of festivals. It was a great run. I think we did a total of 83 shows this year we did, which is good. It's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, well, tell me about the experience with Sons of Apollo. I mean, you were playing with some, obviously awesome musicians. Did it exceed your expectations? Was it about what you expected?
It was what I expected because we've all worked together and I knew them musically and personally. So the only one I didn't do anything with at that point was Jeff Scott Soto, our singer. And man, what a godsend he is. Absolutely, in every way. Yeah, he's fantastic. We hit it off real well, so it was good. So it came together very easily. A bunch of friends basically saying, "Hey, we got this idea for a band. You want to do it?" Mike had this plan in his head that this would be the perfect guy as the singer, as the guitar player, as the bassist, and we did it. And we went into the studio. Me and Derek, we started coming up with a couple of ideas that we would send back and forth just to have something we could pull out of the hat and start off with when we hit the studio. So we have a few things to build off of. And that's what we did. We went into the studio just for 10 days and we said, we're going to make an album in 10 days. And whatever you come up with, we run with it. And that's what we did. There's no second guessing. Well, I'm picturing this and I'm picturing that. No, we trust that if someone has an idea, it's worth exploring. So whoever came up with an idea, we would just start jamming on it and expand on it. And next thing you know, we have a song. We'd be recording by the afternoon, have it all wrapped up at night. Next morning, give it a second listen and maybe add some more parts to it and start on something else. And that it was that easy. And then we got our business stuff together with the label and management and started planning the shows and making videos and getting everything ready to roll it out. So this was all in 2017. We were doing that. And then in 2018, this year, we just went out and played and played and played.
And so, I mean, I saw you guys early on, and you guys are still really kind of learning the songs. But I suppose at the end of the tour, man, you guys had them all down pat.
Oh, yeah. We're playing with our eyes closed and know exactly what's going to happen. And little things in the songs developed that we would cue off each other. And a whole show really formed and came together. Yeah.
Yeah. So working with have you ever worked with like a guy like Billy Sheehan before? I know you've done stuff with Mike Portnoy and that. And you say Jeff Scott Soto was new to you. But like Billy, have you worked with him before?
We used to do a lot of jams together at the NAMM conventions in Anaheim. And we would do these jams. I did them with Billy and Ray Luzier from Korn and Billy and Mike, Mike Portnoy. And studio-wise, there was an album from this fantastic artist, Metal, Madam Mayhem. And Billy was producing it, and I laid four solos for four songs on it. So we've worked together recording-wise and live jamming-wise and everything. So, yeah, he wasn't a stranger at all. And we were the house band together, me, Mike, and Billy, At Eddie Trunk's 30th anniversary special, where we were the house band and guys from Kiss and Anthrax came up and we all played together. Tony Harnell. Yeah. So we've done things for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's I'll tell you what, man, I was blown away at that show I saw in the Forge. It's like, it's just so good. You just mentioned Ray Lazier. I remember I was just talking about this with somebody the other day. I saw Ray Lazier at Rock in the Range last year for the first time. And man, he like floored me. When was the last time you saw a guitar player where your mouth just dropped?
When did I see a guitar player?
Yeah, when was the last time you saw a guitar player just blew you away?
You know, Ray is a drummer.
I understand that. I'm talking about in your line of work.
Okay.
As far as you're concerned, a guitar player.
Yeah. As far as a guitar player, that is jaw-dropping. I mean, there's so many. There's so many great guitar players out there. And I've had the pleasure of playing with a lot of them. There's a guy, Mickey Crystal, who's now playing with Tigers of Pantang. And we played together, and he was kind enough to help me out and play guitar with me for some shows as part of my Bumblefoot band for a little UK run I did about 2 years ago. He's phenomenal, great feel, and can just rip. And, yeah, he's the real deal. He's one worth mentioning. Who else? I'm going to think of 100 people when we press stop.
You've got the red light fever going right now, right?
Well, it's just trying to, you know, my brain is like a funnel and I have a million names and they're just filtering out like one little drop, one name at a time. Of course, Guthrie Govan was an old friend of mine I've known since we were teenagers. Known him 29 years we've been in touch. I was in a guitar magazine in August 89 and he wrote to me and we became pen pals and we would just send each other cassettes and handwritten transcriptions of little weird songs we were writing and trade them back and forth and always stayed close. And when I would be touring through the UK, I'd invite him and he would come up and join me on stage. And at NAMM shows, we would always just sit on the floor and jam for an hour. He's best of the best. Who else? I mean, so many. Jeff Watson from, you know, known for Night Ranger, but also his solo stuff. And he's just incredible. He does things that are just, you can practice and practice and practice and just still never get it down. He has his own way of doing things with, but has so much conviction and just talent. My God. Joel Hoekstra. Mm. Incredible. Doug Rappaport. Incredible. And of course, the well-known cast of characters like Steve Vai, Steve Morse, Steve Lukather, Yngwie, Zach, you know, yeah.
So you go out on tour with Sons of Apollo. Any real memorable shows in any of the countries? I'd see you guys on Instagram and Twitter and everything like that. I mean, you guys are playing all over the world.
Oh, so many. I mean, you know, I love playing in Moscow. There was one crazy run we did where we went just in the start of the last run. We played Prague Power in Atlanta and then went straight from the stage to the airport, took three planes to Osaka, played in Osaka, and then two shows in Tokyo, and then flew back and did a festival in France. And then I went and did a solo show in Moscow while the band went to Budapest for a day off. And then I met them the next morning in Budapest, and we played in Budapest. And then all flew back to Moscow and played in Moscow. And then we went to Plovdiv, Bulgaria. This is a memorable show, a fantastic thing. We played in this ancient Roman theater with a full orchestra and a choir and shot the whole thing on video. And we're going to put out Blu-ray, DVD, whatever next year is going to come out. So that's going to be something. We did two sets. We did a bunch of covers as well.
Yeah, is that the one with Dream On?
Yeah, we did Dream On. We did Comfortably Numb. We did Gates of Babylon from Rainbow. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. I saw some of that on, I think, Jeff Scott Soto's Instagram and whatnot. So you guys are out there touring and stuff. Were you guys just touring and playing the songs and, you know, kind of hanging out and just, you know, being buddies and stuff? Or was there any music that was being made while you were out there on tour and any ideas being laid down for the next record?
Every once in a while, one of us would start playing something at rehearsal and we would all just start jamming to it. And we'd be like, save that for the next record, save it.
You guys recording and stuff?
I might have something on my phone, like a voice memo of it. Hopefully, I got to check. But when I was at home, in between touring, I would do things where every day I would send them a riff. It's like, here's what I came up with today. And just send them all these crazy ideas, which a lot of them I'm sure will use. And some of them I'm probably going to end up using on another Bumblefoot album or something. Yeah.
Now, do you write differently for your own stuff as opposed to Sun's?
I do, but I find that one tends to affect the other. Or I should say, whatever I'm doing affects my own solo music. So if I'm playing with, when I was playing with Guns or doing Art of Anarchy and now Sons of Apollo, it bleeds into my own stuff a lot, where I'm sure the next solo album I do is going to be more progressive and a little heavier because of the influence and just living Sons of Apollo for 2 years.
What about the next Sons of Apollo record? Do you have any idea, like, what direction that might lead in, or that's not even on the table yet?
Oh, I think it'll still sound like us, as far as, Mike is going to play like Mike, I'm going to play like me, and Jeff will sing like Jeff, and that kind of thing. So that's not something we can get away from. It'll be similar, I'm sure, to the first record, but maybe just turning up the intensity knob. I'd like the heavier stuff to be heavier, the crazy stuff to be crazier, and just really up the intensity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you what, that first record is just so killer. So you're in all these bands, like you just mentioned, GNR and the whole thing. And does Sons of Apollo feel like, was that like a really good fit for you? Because it feels like it from me watching from the outside.
Absolutely. I started doing some crazy progressive stuff, like my first record, second record, and, you know, it changed over time, and this sort of brings me back to that, and I forgot how much I love playing just crazy progressive stuff. Yeah.
Now, do you guys have a timetable as to when you'll get back in the studio, or is it because you guys have all these crazy schedules, there's nothing set yet?
No, we've carved out January, where we're going to be getting it done. Yeah, next record.
So you're going to go home, do the holidays, the whole thing, and then in January, you guys... Now, like you were saying, you got some ideas and stuff like that, but do you come in with a clean slate, or do you come in with a head full of ideas?
Come in with ideas, but a lot of things happen spontaneously. Most of the record happens spontaneously. And even then, when we have ideas, the last thing you want to do is overbuild the idea on your own. You want to leave room for it to grow as a band and everybody to contribute and make it something that's truly us, not something where somebody runs with it and ends up writing the whole song. That can happen. And on the first record, that happened a bit, which is fine, but trying not to overwrite. So if I come up with an idea, if I come up with a riff, I try to just leave it at that riff and resist the urge to make the next part and the part after that and say, hey, check out this whole song I wrote. Hmm. You know, we all want it to be a band effort where we all contribute so that it does sound like all of us.
So that's cool. So January, you're pretty much set. I wasn't sure if other guys had other things going on, like, you know, Mike's doing things, but you're ready to go.
Yeah, we've set aside the time. We've committed to recording the next record in January.
That's cool. So I'm not in a band, obviously, but it's got to be like kind of like having a relationship where you got to make sure one hand knows what the other hand's doing.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's five wacky guys married to each other. You know, yeah.
So how excited are you to get back in the studio with these guys and create again?
I can't wait. It's going to be good. Yeah. I just really want to make sure we outdo the last record, and the record after this upcoming one outdoes this one, and we just keep raising the bar and demanding more of ourselves and meeting that higher setting that we keep pushing. Just in anything, you know, you just always want to become better. You want to just keep bettering what you've done and keep growing and keep improving and just keep developing and growing. So I'm excited to take that step and see what we come up with.
Yeah, and like we were mentioning before, you got a great lead singer that you love working with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's the best. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's out doing the TSO thing right now. Do you ever go see that?
I haven't. I should, but
you've never seen TSO, really?
No, because I'm always touring and doing things when they are, and there's just never the chance.
Yeah.
I know enough guys doing it, and I would love to see them. I almost did last December I did a run in Texas of solo shows, and I did Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio, and every single one of those shows, TSO, the next day was at the other place, that the other city that I was in. So we just kept missing each other.
Now, how often in your career did you audition for bands, or did people ask you to join their bands?
Oh, it happens. It definitely happens, but I've always wanted to stick to my own thing and make sure that if I join a band, it's one thing to play with people and jam or do something short term. But for me, the most important thing is to truly be part of it. I'm not a hired gun kind of guy. I'm someone that if you want to be creative with and make something real with, that's what I want to be part of.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. It's like I was talking to someone recently, and they said, Kenny Wayne Shepherd. He said Joe Walsh tried, hooking him onto a tour one time and, going out and stuff like that. Anyone ever tried just hiring you for a tour, or you just won't do that?
I've done it. Remember in 2009, Lita Ford called me from the stage in Sweden Rock. She called me, she's like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I'm off for the summer. Why? What's up?" And she said, I'm looking to make a couple of changes. And I was like, "Are you sure you want to do that?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she wanted to put a whole new band together. And she had shows coming right up. She had a whole tour for the summer. So on 2 days' notice, we put together a new band, rehearsed, and got out there and started doing all festivals in Europe and a run of casinos and shows in the U.S. So it happens. And I don't mind doing that. I enjoy doing that. It's just that if I'm going to be in something long-term, it's got to be something real.
Right. Yeah. Now, next year, like you said, you got the thing in January. You guys are going to book some time, record a new SOA album. And then also you got the thing with Carl Palmer. Talk about that.
Yeah, so right before doing the SOA stuff, the Sons of Apollo album, well, first I'm going to be doing from January 3rd to 7th in Palm Springs, California. It's called the G4 Experience. It's a Joe Satriani guitar camp. It'll be me, Kiko, and a whole bunch of great people doing this thing. It's going to be a lot of fun, really good guitar camp. So that finishes up, and then we do the Sons of Apollo thing. Then I'm going to be doing Shiprocked.
By yourself or with Sons?
That'll just be me being part of the All-Star Stowaways band and doing something with David there also. So we got that. But way toward the end of the year, November 8th, 9th, and 10th in Philly, Carl Palmer is doing a drum camp, and I'm going to be there doing a guitar clinic and some jamming. So yeah, I'm going to be part of that. Go to carlpalmer.com and you can find out all about it. And he's building his cast of people that will be there and being part of everything. Right now it's I'll be there. There's going to be a keyboardist and a vocal coach. You got Simon Fitzpatrick, who is a great bass player and plays a Chapman stick, and he's going to be giving a class on that. You got Paul. I always mess up trying to pronounce his name. I'm sorry, Paul. Paul Bilatowicz. He's Polish. My grandparents were Polish, too, so yeah. So you got two Polish guitar players that are going to be there, and he's going to be giving a great class. Carl, of course, doing his thing. And so that is at 2300 South Swanson Street. The 2300 Arena is what it's called. And that's in Philly. And that is November 8th, 9th, and 10th of 2019. You have 12 months to get yourself there. So
do it.
Yeah, I hope to see you there.
Yeah, now, okay, so that leads me to my next thing. So I had Carl Palmer on the podcast 2 months ago, yeah. And we started talking about prog rock. And I said, I mentioned Sons of Apollo, and he says he doesn't think Sons of Apollo is a prog rock band. Now, he also said, everyone has their own opinion and stuff, but that was just his. Do you consider yourself a prog rock band?
I think we're, it's like the Crayola box where you had red orange and orange red, the two different colors, like the two different shades in between orange and red. So are we a prog rock band or a rock prog band? That's the thing. So as far as prog bands go, I don't know if we're fully, I don't think we're fully prog, but our prog moments are very proggy. Mm-hmm. So you could say we're more of a proggy rock band, but when you see us live, it's more of a rock band, but we definitely have those crazy moments. You know, when you have songs in 19 and 13 and 11 and 9, 16 and stuff like that, that makes you a prog group, I think. That kind of stuff. And the technical things that are going on in there, it's prog. But again, it's all interpretation and of the definition of what the word means to you. So, yeah, if Carl doesn't think we're a prog band, then to him, we're not a prog band. And we're just a rock band that has some wacky moments. To other people, we're considered a prog band. And that's fine, too. We're a prog band with rocky moments. But we just are what we are. And then Rose by any other name, you know, what's in a name anyway?
Right. So when you were growing up as a kid, were you influenced by the Carl Palmers and the Yeses and Super Tramps?
Yeah. Yeah, a whole lot of prog stuff. The UK and all the Bill Bruford stuff that he was doing. Well, of course, yes. And ELP. And even, I would say, Jethro Tull. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of proggy stuff. Minstrel in the Gallery and those things.
King Crimson. Yeah,
of course, King Crimson. Yeah. Totally. So more of the 70s into the 80s, early 80s prog, I would say, I was into.
Now, we've hung out before, and you can play pretty much any song. Is there a song out there that you can't play? That you just can't figure out?
Most solos by Alan Holdsworth.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I remember when I picked up the Road Games album and playing along with it and learning it, and then the solo came, and no matter how many times I dropped the needle and lifted off after 2 seconds and trying to hum the little batch of notes, I just could not figure out his approach. It was just this whole other way of thinking and playing that was so alien to me. And always will be. He just baffles me. He boggles me. And I love him for it. Rest his soul. The amount of influence and inspiration that he has given to guitar players is immeasurable. Yeah.
Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
Never did. I have a lot of friends that have played with him. But I never had that experience. No.
What about a guy like Dimebag Darrell? Of course, he's been gone for a long time, but what do you think of a guitar player like that?
He was just as influential metal-wise. I mean, all of Pantera, really. They just redirected the entire path of metal in a good way. Man, everybody just wanted to get Vinny's drum sound, and everybody was just hard panning, super tight guitar parts left and right, trying to get that dime tight width and everything. And they were the template of what everybody wanted as their foundation. They were just the fucking shit.
Yeah, that's cool. Any other guitar players that really had an influence on you when you were growing up or even as an adult?
Angus. I probably would have been like an Angus clone until I heard Eddie Van Halen. And
you told me that you learned Eruption backwards and forwards.
Yeah. I used to take all stuff that I liked, and after I learned it, I would put it on a cassette and I would learn it. And then I would unscrew the chassis of the cassette and flip the reels, put it back together. And now, I mean, a cassette is just a 4-track tape where stereo side one and stereo side two, left and right and left and right, and when you flip them, that track four becomes track one backwards, track three is track two backwards, and all of that. So now you have everything backwards, so I would learn everything in reverse. So I would take all my favorite albums and learn them in reverse just to see what it sounded like and how it worked and how the reverse resolves musically played out and what they became. And it was actually a pretty good thing to do when you take guitar riffs and learn them backwards, and it sort of opens up your vocabulary a little more, and your songwriting ideas as well. So it was a pretty warped idea, but that's yeah, I was just full of warped ideas.
What kind of kid were you growing up?
I was that very shy, heady kind of just active brain, and I would do things like that. I would turn tapes inside, you know, reverse them and listen to the music and build things. Yeah, all right, I just had a crazy thought. I attached a bunch of pulleys on strings and thumbtacks to the light switch in my room so that when I'm lying in bed, I could like pull the string and shut off my light without having to get out of bed. Like things like that I would do. I was little nerdy scientist kid, but on the outside I was this long-haired, leave me the fuck alone kind of kid that would just, yeah. So on the outside everyone thought I was this bad boy, and I just wouldn't talk to anyone. I was just too shy. I was just very introverted. And inside I was just very intense thoughts, emotionally, just I was a sponge for learning. I loved to learn. I did crazy things. Like when I was 10 years old, I remember I read 3,000 pages of world history and wrote a 200-page summary just for myself, starting with the Australopithecus and ending with the space shuttle taking off, the very first one, because that's what the age that I did it. It was like in on April, you know, boom, boom, boom. The space shuttle made, you know, ran its first mission and things like that. I was just, I was that kind of kid. And, you know, I had a Commodore 64 and I would program in BASIC and just come up with all these if then logic strings and make my own little space video games that emulated like Laser Blast from Atari 2600 and things like that. But there was like a duality. There was that side, and then there was the fuck the world, nobody understands me, I'm gonna, you know, just yeah, it was the angry
Teenage rebellion.
Yeah, there was that angry, I don't give a fuck, I'll pretty much do anything kind of guy that would really just, it's not that I didn't have a filter or had an issue with being impulsive or anything like that. Like, I just had this I don't give a fuck attitude and would do anything. Kind of ballsy, maybe inappropriate things. But they were fun. And at the same time, I would go and I would study up on electronics and learn about, you know, the color bands of resistors and, you know, how much they change any, you know, voltage and things like that. And I guess it never changed when I got a second house in Jersey that I was going to turn into a studio. I pretty much ripped out the 80-year-old wiring of the entire house and reran all the new circuits and runs on a new panel and everything without ever really learning how to do it or going to school for it. I'm surprised I didn't kill myself or blow anything up. But like that kind of shit I would do. Yeah.
So a final thing here for you, because we got to get you up on stage here in a few minutes. But I just wanted to ask you, so other than sitting in my Dodge in a 37-degree night here in a cold Niagara Falls, USA, you in a good spot in your life right now? You got the holidays coming up. You got, like you say, working on a new SOA. You got pretty much 2019 kind of planned out. You happy how things are going?
I am. Very much so. Yeah, all is cool. It's nice when you're doing a lot of things and they're all moving forward. So you have Sons of Apollo. I'm starting to work on some of my own music as well.
I was going to ask you about your solo stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to be rolling out my hot sauces again. What happened was the the stock ran out and I had an all-in-one company that was doing the manufacturing, bottling, distributing, everything. And they sold the company, so I had to first go out. And I lost a year of time just finding a new manufacturer, a new distributor, and getting all the pieces in place and doing all of that. So by early next year, Bumblefoot Hot Sauces should be back out there. And I'm super excited about that. Yeah, I love that stuff. Yeah. So, and then, yeah, my own music starting to write some songs. I think writing for the next Sons of Apollo album has also got me in that, I guess, creative mode where you just start writing. And I'm starting to come up with some wacky guitar music that maybe I'll do a guitar album, and hopefully a bunch of my friends will be guests on it, and I could make some interesting stuff for people.
That's cool, because nowadays they can just record wherever they are in the world and just send it to you, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that would be great. I would love for them to put their time into it and come up with something and not be on the spot, and let them live with it and really just come up with what they think is best for it.
But with Sons of Apollo, isn't it kind of cool to be like organic and be in the same room?
Absolutely. That's when you get the real shit, when you're not over quantizing things and you're not flying in your parts from somewhere else, when you're all staring at each other and you're locking into each other's pocket. That's something that gets lost when you're just doing it the convenient way of just, yeah, you do it at home and you match everything to the grid and just, yeah. It's great to be able to just be in the room and play the song and record it the way you play it and have that be the foundation that everything is on. It's more real and more spontaneous things happen. It's, I guess, more truthful in that way.
Well, I got to say it one time here before we cut out, but happy 10th anniversary.
That's right. Yes. Today, it is November 23rd that we're doing this. It is the 10th anniversary of Chinese Democracy coming out. And to all the GNR fans, happy anniversary. I'm glad I could contribute to the record and be part of the history. And I hope you all enjoy it and have enjoyed it for the last 10 years.
All right, Bubba. Well, listen, man, I really appreciate you doing this for me. And safe travels. Have great holidays and the whole thing. And I can't wait to hear the next SOA album.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure, man. Happy holidays.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Great stuff from Bumblefoot today on the Talking Rock podcast. I can hardly wait to check out the brand new Sons of Apollo stuff. Maybe sometime in 2019, man. That would be killer. By the way, if you don't have the first record, it's definitely worth getting. Come on, give me a break. With that band right there, that record is solid stuff. There's no question about it. But got to thank Bumblefoot from the bottom of my heart for coming on the Talking Rock podcast. He doesn't do very many interviews right now. He's kind of, just kind of doing his own thing. But he said that he would, do one with me. And so that was really cool of him to take the time out. Like I said, out in my car before a gig. But it was a lot of fun. And I hope you guys dig that. Hey, listen, subscribe to the podcast. Of course, check back often because I've already got, I think, 3 interviews lined up for next week. Plus, I'm doing a live interview in front of a live audience coming up here with a guitar legend. And I'm hoping that they're going to give me the audio for that. So I don't want to say anything about that just yet. They want me to interview this guy for like 45 minutes, and it should be pretty cool stuff. So we'll hopefully have more details on that coming up next week. In the meantime, feel free to leave a voicemail for me, 248-586-2988. And as always, 5-star ratings, reviews, always welcome, like I said in the beginning, because this is a brand new podcast. We're trying to push our way up to the front. Thank you so much for checking out Talking Rock. We'll do it again very soon. And I do mean very soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.